thank you very much, and good afternoon, everybody, and very much welcome to this afternoon's proceedings. My name is Barbara Roach. I chair an all-party group which is made up of politicians, business leaders, trade unionists, and what we aim to do is to campaign for a positive view of migration, and we particularly focus on the economic aspect of migration. I'm very excited about this afternoon's proceedings. I'm very much looking forward to it. The title of this afternoon is How is London Being Transformed by Migration? It's part of some ongoing work that's been done by LSE over quite a period of time now. We're extremely lucky and privileged this afternoon that we have a number of very, very distinguished contributors. I'll be chairing the first part of this afternoon, and of course there will be, as we move through, offer sets of speakers some time for discussion, and then of course there will be some time at the end. The only thing that I will urge, as we see, it's a fairly packed programme, so the only thing that I would sort of urge from you is some discipline about the questions, really to make them questions, and then we'll be able to get things through really efficiently and make sure that we've got all the views that we want to hear. So very, very many thanks once again. And we're going to start off by actually looking at the context. What are the what is the context for our discussion? And we're going to look at the impacts of migration between 2001 and 11. And basically, what is it that we've learnt from the last decade? We know that London is a powerhouse. We know that certainly presently as well with the talk of economic recovery about its importance. So what about migration and has that been one of the drivers? So if we first of all start with you, Antoine, and Antoine Patou, who is the LSE Fellow in Human Geography. Thank you.
All right, so hello everyone. That's not the right one. All right, so today I'm going to be starting out with the context for migration, so hopefully that can provide some background for the succeeding next discussions. So this work that I'll be presenting here was started with Susie Hall at LSE Cities, and I've developed this a bit further since then, but some of the maps are from that period, so just wanted to signal that. So my talk today will be very map-heavy, as you can see from the handouts. I'll first be discussing very briefly some limitations of the analysis I've conducted. I'll be showing the situation in 2001 also very briefly. I'll be going into a bit more detail on the trends between 2001 and 2011, see if we can identify any. Then, I'll sort of zoom in to South London to illustrate some of the points I'll be making, and then I'll discuss some causes and implications. So my analysis is only going to be focused on country of birth data for 2001 and 2011. I'm not going to be discussing date of arrival. I know some of the other presentations today will be discussing specifically date of arrival, so that's good. I won't be talking about ethnicity or nationality. So when I talk about migration, I talk about people who were born in particular countries, what happened when they came to the UK, if they acquired nationality, or how they are categorized from an ethnicity point of view is not sort of the, my focus here. I'll be focusing spatially on Greater London only. While I know that London region is much bigger than that, I think mostly it was data limitations or computing limitations which meant that I had to restrict the scale of my analysis. And I'll be focusing on spatial patterns, hence all the maps, rather than the socioeconomic characteristics of migrants. So to start with the situation in 2011, I'll first show why London has been called a super diverse city from the UK in the UK context. I'll then be focusing on the UK-born in the wider London region and then looking at the settlement patterns of different migrant groups. So So this map here is of England. The different color shades are different types of spatial scales. So central cities are in black, metropolitan regions are in gray, urbanized rural and rural are in light gray and white, respectively. The size of the circle just indicates how many of the world regions have an above average share in that particular local authority. So there are 14 world regions total if you sort of divide the world up in geographical regions. And you can see that inner London and West London, on average, have 14 above average shares of these 14 world regions. So we can sort of see that compared to the rest of the UK, this is a really diverse place with broad representatives from every single world region with above average shares. So just to situate the analysis a bit, that's what I'll be looking at, especially the black part, which is Greater London. So what about the UK born? So, this is one visualization of the Greater London region. It extends way outside of Greater London as we usually know it. If we look at migration and specifically the percentage of the UK born, we can see that Greater London really concentrates most of the population not born in the UK. There are certain areas in Greater London where there are about 30, between 30 and 40% of UK born only. The western part in general, Greater London, is much more non-UK born than the east. That's the sort of the broad pictures here. So I won't be focusing on the outlying areas to the west of Greater London, just on Greater London itself. Just to show what what I'm missing in this analysis is significant clusters of non-UK born outside of Greater London. So if we look at, from a very static point of view in 2001, how different country of birth groups have settled in the UK, in Greater London, you can sort of see some distinctive patterns. So Indians on the top left seem to have four broad clusters of the city in which they, they cluster. Jamaicans as well in different areas. Pakistanis and Jamaicans, and Nigerians and Jamaicans as well. So each country of birth, and there are 28 for which data in 2001 and 2011 is possible, each of these 28 migrant groups have significantly different settlement patterns, right? So when discussing trends, The one thing I was trying to do is to say, well, we have these 28 migrant groups, but can we still identify sort of common patterns of settlement that could allow us to differentiate between diversity? The provocation here is that there is not one diversity, but there are several types of diversity in the London context, and it's important to unpack them because some of these diversities are at threat, and that's the point I want to make today. I'll then be discussing the return of the up to the center of the UK born, and I'll try and present a map which summarizes the changes as I've found them. So using factor analysis on these 28 different country of birth groups in Greater London, what I found is that you could identify three main migrant groups in terms of very similar settlement patterns. So the first one is made up of, OECD countries plus China and Hong Kong. They are what we can call the rich country migrants, those who come here because of work opportunities and so on. And they made up 3.6% of the population of Greater London in 2001, 5.5% in 2011. And then you have two other groups, which we can sort of loosely say are poor country migrants, but they do have very different settlement patterns. So group number two is made up of South Asians and Kenya, Romania, but not Bangladesh, because Bangladesh has a very particular settlement pattern. The jump from 5% to 7.9% of the population of Greater London. The third group is Jamaican, Nigeria, Portugal, Turkey, and Somalia, from 3.3% in 2001 to 5% in 2011. So these three groups share very similar settlement patterns, as I'll be showing later on, and are navigating the sort of waters of London changes in very different ways. I've also added in the percentages of the UK and Poland, because I want to say that all these countries I'll be looking at as a sort of sub-selection of the 28 possible migrant groups still make up quite a significant percentage of Greater London population. So 85% in 2001, 92% in 2011. So I am missing out on some country of birth groups, but I think most of what I'm saying here can give us a general picture of what's going on in the London context. So type one, OECD countries, rich country migrants, this is their settlement pattern in Greater London in 2001. As you can see, very highly concentrated in the center and the southwest of the city. If we jump to 2011, and I'll do this a couple of times so you can sort of see the change, there's a very pronounced movement towards the east of the city in those 10 years. So it seems as though this group has expanded its spatial reach, in a sense, towards the eastern parts of the city. If we move to type 2 migrants, so South Asia plus Kenya, and Romania, they're, you know, what's striking is that they cluster in four parts of the city, which are all, you know, in the outer reaches of Greater London. And in the 10 years between 2001 and 2011, it seems as though they have managed to consolidate their presence in these four clusters, even gaining some spaces in the northeast. So, you know, compared to the type 1 migrants, they haven't sort of conquered new territory, but they've managed to hold on to the spaces that in which they lived in. If we move to type 3 migrants, the interesting thing here is that they present a very different spatial pattern. They historically have settled in more central locations, and, you know, this has meant that they're more at threat by other groups moving into central areas and other contextual factors making the central vicinity more difficult to stay in. So if you can see, between 2001 and 2011, these clusters have, you know, blown up, have been pushed towards the outer parts of the city. So three types of diversities, and each of these areas can be said to be, you know, to have different types of diversities depending on the people who live there. So, you know, is the center of the city, where there are mostly rich country migrants, a diverse area, even though there are not migrants from other places? And, you know, is the question that I want to provoke here, and to say that there are different types of diversities. An area where there are only French, Germans, Italians, and Spanish is diverse in one sense of the term, but it's not diverse given the sort of variety of migrant groups that exist in the London context. So if we look at the way in which the UK-born have changed their settlement patterns in these 10 years, what seems to me to be happening is a return to the center. And this is especially in the areas to the east of the city that, you know, we've sort of seen the group 3 migrants leave. I won't be able to give any sort of causal explanations here. I'll just be able to show these changes in spatial patterns. But it seems to me that the UK-born are re-entering London in one way, and we'll be hearing in the next presentation a bit more about this phenomenon. So to summarize these changes, what I've tried to do is to divide up Greater London into areas depending on what's been happening to them from the basis of the experience of these main groups. So what this shows us is, in color, the areas in which these corresponding groups have increased their presence, and its presence significantly. So migrants from group one, as we can see, have increased their presence massively in the central parts of the city, and the eastern bits that I showed on the maps where they have been going. Migrant group two have managed to expand their reach in the areas in which they clustered, so northwest, northeast, and southwest. But it seems as though migrant three have been sort of more responding to changes, and you can sort of see a much more blown out type of pattern with a less clear movement, in sort of like more of a rejection from the center of the city. The UK-born have been coming up from many different areas and also taking up space in the center. If we complicate this story a little bit by bringing in combinations of groups, we can see in green the areas in which both rich country migrants and the UK-born have come in. And so we can see that between them, the blue and the green have taken a hold of the major part of central London, pushing out other types of populations, including migrants from group 3 in red, and combinations of migrants from group 3 and 2 in orange. So, you know, this is a messy picture, and migration is a messy phenomenon in London. It's very difficult to find any clear pattern. But it does seem as though each migrant group or type has its own area and is living this 10-year period in different ways, responding to different contexts. Migrants from group 1 and from the UK have managed to reestablish their presence in the center. Other groups are being pushed out a bit more. So to sort of give a bit of an illustration of these ideas here, I've zoomed in on South London, specifically the three boroughs of Southwark, Lambeth, and Lewisham. And by blowing up this picture, we can sort of see migrants from OECD countries and the UK-born have sort of increased their presence in the top part of the borough. In the outer part of the borough, there is an increase in populations that, you know, that that have been in migrants from Group 3 that used to live in the more central areas but have been pushed out. If we add in the other the combinations, we can see how much of a battleground South London is at the moment, with many different groups trying to either maintain their position there, increase their presence, and we can sort of see how the messiness of migration plays out in this particular place. So to do this, we first need to start with the context. So there has been an increase in population in most of the LSOAs in South London. If we look at the UK population, we can sort of see that in 2001, they mostly clustered in the southern parts of the borough. In 2011, there has been a sort of re-entry towards the top and towards the sort of middle areas. So, this seems to me as the UK-born coming in to the borough in places where they did not used to settle beforehand. So this is sort of a summary map showing us the standard deviation of sector of share changes. Places which are more in red are places where the UK-born have left. Places in green are where they have come in this 10-year period. It's a clear movement towards the middle parts of the borough, leaving some parts at the top and some parts at the bottom. So if we move to our three groups now, we can start with Germany in 2001 and in 2011. So there's a clear arrival of individuals born in Germany in South London, where they did not used to live before. If we summarize this, we can sort of see green at the top, so an arrival towards the top, and departures from selected areas within the rest of the three boroughs. Individuals born in the USA, we have quite a similar picture, with more of an arrival from the west and towards the top. Here it seems as though they were not very present in the area, so what we're seeing here is mostly an arrival at the top in the west. So if you look at Group 2, who were historically not present in these three boroughs, except at the western tip, and from the larger map of Greater London, we know that they cluster much more to the south. What we can see is also, from this group, an ability to enter these three boroughs, especially towards the top, but also sort of extending their clusters in the south. So a very interesting arrival of individuals born in India and the southern and the northern tip of these three boroughs, which is something which contradicts the larger picture of their being able to consolidate clusters. They also seem to be able to enter spaces which they didn't populate beforehand. The same for Pakistan at a sort of lower scale and towards more the middle areas of the borough. But still an ability to enter territory that they did not occupy beforehand. Things are a bit different with Group 3. If we look at Jamaicans who historically have settled very, clustered strongly in this area, what we see is a movement outwards of this population towards the east and towards the south. So a very clear pattern in which populations that lived in the middle of the borough are being pushed further east and further south. A similar picture for Nigerians, with very strong clusters towards the northern part and western part of the borough, have also been moved more towards the south. So a clear departure from Brixton, from the northern tip of the borough, towards the south, the southeast. An interesting contrast here is a population which increased in numbers very, very quickly between 2001 and 2010 is Poland, which was practically non-existent in these areas, have suddenly increased very strongly. I mean, this is an exaggerated picture because I'm using the same scale as for 2001, but it just means that the maximum number of people in the borough are now everywhere, at least in the borough. So it's just showing us quite a strong progression of this population. So also an ability to enter places which they did not occupy beforehand. So if you come back to this messy picture, we can sort of see that, looking at country by country, what we can sort of see is that some country of birth groups, some migrant groups, have an ability to enter or maintain their position within bits of central London. Other groups are less able to do so. So, you know, we can start to think as to why this is the case. And what I'm proposing here is not anything definite. It's just some ideas and some assessments of the current situation. And one thing that seems striking to me is the change in the spatial distribution of benefit claimants and social renting households. If we look at benefits from 2001 to 2010, we can sort of see in the same way a departure of benefit claimants from the central eastern areas of the city. The picture is quite similar with social renting households, where they've also there's also been many less people living in socially rented households in these boroughs. So, you know, what this seems to indicate is that given the threats that migrants from Group 3 are already facing in maintaining their hold, their position in central London, current threats that seem to be, you know, endangering this diversity of London, or at least maintaining diversity, is recommodification of labor through local government cuts, which is diminishing the ability of councils to provide social housing, but also welfare reforms, with things like the bedroom tax, housing benefits cuts, and the benefit cap, which are, you know, which point to a picture in which maybe it's not just ethnicity, the diversity of countries which is under threat, but also social diversity in central London. The housing market seems to be playing a role here too, with increasing house prices pushing out people who are affected by benefit cuts and welfare reforms, but also, you know, racial profiling that can be a consequence of proposed immigration checks, where people renting a private accommodation need to show their visa and show their immigration documents, which can lead to estate agents deciding that it's much safer to rent to whites. So there's also all these dimensions that come into this picture of change. The one point I want to make today is that, you know, saying that London is a super diverse city leads us to, you know, ignore the fact that there is not just one diversity, but that there are different types of diversities which have different spatial locations in the city. That some of them are, you know, can thrive and develop and occupy new space. Others are being pushed further out of the city. You know, whether we want London to stay a diverse city, we'll maybe discuss in other sessions with impacts on innovation and so on. But, you know, it seems to me that from a right to the city approach, these different migrant groups should be able to stay within the center of the city. All right, thank you for your attention.
Antoine, that was absolutely fascinating. Our next speaker is Eric Kaufman, who's the Professor of Politics at Birkbeck.
Okay. Eric. I might just have to stick. Not sure if it's on there or not, but...
Is it on there?
I think we'll go here.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah.
Okay. Oops. Okay, well, thank you. That was fantastic. I don't have any maps that are quite as impressive as that. What I'm going to be focusing on is more the individual level. So I think it'll hopefully be a nice compliment to Antoine here. Individual motivations, particularly focusing on ethnicity and whether ethnic motivations are playing a role in people's location decisions. This paper is entitled White Flight from London? And it's a project, ESRC-funded project under the Secondary Data Analysis Initiative. And I'm working with Gareth Harris, also of Birkbeck College, on this. And we are also partnering with Demos, so that's just a bit of that. Now, how's my advance on here? Ah, here we go. So with the census results then being released in late 2012 and early 2013, we had headlines such as these, focusing on the fact that London's population in 2011 contained 620,000 fewer white British people than in 2001 at a time when the city's population increased by over a million. So how do we explain this discrepancy between a gain in non-white British people and a decline in white British people? And so two narratives seem to emerge in the media. One is the white flight narrative represented here. My pen will work. Doesn't seem to work. Okay. Here, this idea of white flight, that the idea that because London had become more diverse, this had made white British people uncomfortable, and therefore that accounts for the increased leaving of white British from the city. The other narrative was that represented at the top by The Economist, or to some extent here in the BBC article by Mark Easton, the idea that it's just the people who had the means and mobility to leave the city for leafier, nicer places, and this happened to be disproportionately white British rather than ethnic minorities. And so it's a sort of that spurious correlation is what accounts for the pattern of white British out, others in. And now I want to suggest that both of these explanations have some quite real problems with them, and I want to sort of propose something different for you. And the way I'm going to do this is I'm going to look a lot at census data from the ONS Longitudinal Study, which is a 1% census sample linked over successive censuses. And what this is going to allow us to do is to reconstruct in a certain way census data from prior to 2001, because the question on ethnicity that asks you to tick white British or white other or white Irish only appears in 2001, but if you actually attribute to individuals prior to 2001, so if they were marked white British in 2001, we're assuming that they were white British in 1991, in 1981, 1971, so we can kind of reconstruct how the picture might have looked in earlier decades, and in fact that's a pretty safe assumption because the stability of the white British category between 2001 and 2011 was something like 99%. So there's very little variability into and out of that category within individuals. Right. So what this whole slew of numbers is essentially trying to look at is this is the white British population. This is the number in the ONSLS that entered London from other parts of England and Wales in the decade of the 2000s. This here is the number that were in London in 2001 in the LS and were no longer there, but were in other parts of England and Wales in the 2011 LS. And the net is just literally this minus this. Now, this number, negative 4,000, if we multiply by 100, we get 400,000, negative 400,000. Now, how do we get from there to the 620,000 recorded decline in white British in London? Well, this turns out to be a methodological issue, and just that there was an oversample, a worse undersampling, in London in the 90s than in the 2000s, and so you have to multiply this by actually 150 rather than 100. So essentially the story is that 600,000 is accounted for by more white British people leaving London than entering it, to the tune of 600,000. Which represents about 13% of the 2001 white British population. Now, what's interesting is if we go back in time, we can see that the net outflow of white British people from London is relatively constant going back four decades. 11% in the 90s, 11% in the 80s, and about 15% in the 70s. So there is this general pattern, white British people leaving London, more leaving than entering, to the tune of about 10 to 15%. So it doesn't seem like anything new was happening in the 2000s that hadn't happened before. Now, the next thing I wanted to do is look within the category of the white British at, for example, the white British working class. And here we see, if we compare the working and middle classes to the white British professionals and managers, there's a somewhat higher net outflow amongst white British working middle class compared to white British professionals. So about 14 versus 11, or in the 2000s, 15% of white British working and middle class net outflow compared to 12% for white British professionals. It's not a huge difference, but it is an important difference. It also speaks against the materialist interpretation that says it's the people with the means who can leave. In fact, it's the people who are the people with the most means, the white British professionals, relatively speaking, are not have a lower net migration rate. Now, in aggregate terms, there's more white British people leaving, and there's more white British, more white British professionals leaving London. But there's also a lot more white British professionals entering the city to counterbalance that. So the net is actually lower. Where there's really quite an interesting difference, though, is in terms of life cycles. So white British people with children massively leave London. I mean, that just seems to be a pattern. About 20% in the 70s, and roughly 20% in the 2000s. So it just seems to be that when people have children, they leave the city. And that is a pattern that also holds for minorities, but much less so, as we'll see. Whereas white British people in their 20s have, since the 1980s, been entering London more than they've been leaving it, quite massively, actually, about 25% or so. So that's kind of an interesting pattern. Now, if we compare the white British net flows with the minority net flows, we see a vastly different picture, clearly. And this, I think, accounts for some of that substantial ethnic change in the city, from 58% white British in 2001 to 45% in 2011. So for minorities, there's actually a net inflow through the 70s and the 80s from the rest of England and Wales into London. Now, that's reversed itself, so now minorities are starting to look a bit more like white British. So they're starting to have a net outflow pattern, about 2% in the 90s and 4%. So that's it's a doubling. It represents a significant increase, particularly if we look at minorities with children, from a 3% inflow to 3.6 outflow in the 90s and 7% in the 2000s. So a trend towards minorities also leaving London seems to be the case, but I just want to point out that minorities leave London at a much lower, or have historically left London at a much lower rate than white British have, only about a third or a quarter as much. It's worth also mentioning that the difference between the patterns of minorities with children and minorities in their 20s, that life cycle pattern is not as pronounced, and this turns up in some of the statistical analysis as well. So it seems to be, for the white British, when they have children, they are more likely to leave the city than minorities. Now, this question then of net outflow of white British people kind of got me thinking, well, how did the city actually continue to grow in population for so many years? And if you go back in time, you can see the last decade where you had positive net migration from the rest of England, more people from the rest of England coming to London than vice versa, was the 1860s. And and then by the 1890s, we're kind of where we are today in terms of net, about 10 to 15% loss. So the population only continued to rise because of an excess of births over deaths. Immigration actually didn't play much role at all in these earlier decades, as we'll see in a minute. So, for example, if we look at London's population by birthplace, people often talk about London as a historic immigration city. Actually, that's very, very overstated. If you look at the proportion of London's population that was UK-born from 1851 to roughly 1951, it was in the mid-90%. So very much, I think I would say, very much a UK-born city up until the post-war decades. I mean, there are some exceptions in the Jews and the Irish, but they were not large numbers like anything like what we see today. But then beginning post-Second World War, we start to see a drop in the UK-born share and a rise in the non-UK-born population. And that really becomes the driver then of population increase in the city post the 1980s. Whereas before it was excess of births over deaths, now immigration's playing a much, much bigger role. Just want to say a few things about this question of displacement, one of the questions we were interested in was this issue of white flight. And some of the patterns that we've noticed are, for example, displacement in cities or areas with high levels of occupancy. In city, for example, if we look at London in the decade of the 2000s, on this axis we've got the change in the white British population, which generally has declined. That is below zero here. And this is the change on the y-axis of minority population. So you see that inverse relationship at ward level. So these are wards, population approximately 10 to 30,000 of London in the period 2000s. And so wards that tended to have the largest increase in ethnic minority population tended to have the largest decrease in white British population, which is kind of counterintuitive, but it sort of speaks to this displacement effect. And we could ask, what is going on here? Is it the case that we have white flight or white avoidance by white British people in response to the increasing diversity of their local areas? Well, it's interesting to look at the rest of the southeast outside of London, where the pattern is less pronounced. It seems like areas can absorb both minorities and whites, so you don't see as steep a decline, but there's still a statistically significant relationship between rise in minority population, decline in white British. What's particularly striking, though, about the southeast region is if we look at the minority share in 2001 and the change in the white British population in the decade of the 2000s, we have a very similar relationship to this. That is, if an area already had a certain proportion of minorities or a high share of minorities, then it tended to have relative white British decline in the 2000s, the subsequent decade. So why might this be the case? What we then did was we looked at the level of the individual. So we, getting away from the level of the ward, we wanted to look at individuals and ask, what was the ethnic composition of their origin ward? And then what is the ethnic composition of their destination ward, and what's the difference between those two? That is, to what extent have they moved away from diversity in the preceding year? And this comes from the British Household Panel Survey and the Understanding Society survey, but we also reran the analysis with the ONSLS and got the same basic results. So what this shows is at low levels of origin, sorry, where your origin ward is relatively white, so less than 5% minorities, there's not much difference between the blue line and the red line. The blue line is ethnic minorities. The red line is white British. They're very close together. So there doesn't seem to be much difference in their origin destination. However, when we get down here to where you're originating in a ward that's half minorities, then there's a gap of about 10 points between the origin and destinations of minorities and whites. So what this is saying is that controlling for all other properties of individuals, age, education, income, housing, marital status, as well as properties of wards, such as population density and deprivation, there still remains a sort of quite a significant unexplained component linked to ethnicity. So two individuals originating in a ward that's half minorities, the white individual will tend to move to a ward that's 10 points whiter than the minority individual. So again, does this point to white flight as the explanation? We kind of, to get at this a little bit more, we did a survey, YouGov survey, which tried to look at both attitudes to immigration and race and mobility histories. And what we found initially was something quite similar to the previous evidence. That is, those who'd moved to a whiter ward were disproportionately white British. That is, 62% of the white British respondents had moved to a whiter ward in the past 10 years, whereas only 38 had moved to a more diverse ward. Whereas amongst those who were not white British, the proportions were much more similar. So there still seemed to be a predilection amongst white British people to have moved to a whiter ward in the previous 10 years. And that kind of lines up with the findings from the Understanding Society and the ONSLS. So it clearly seems to be the case there's an ethnic difference in terms of which wards people are moving to that cannot be explained by income, education, housing, marital, etc., or the economic properties of wards. However, when we look just at the white British population and we try to discriminate between white liberals and white conservatives, or whites with more racist attitudes and less racist attitudes, we don't see much of a difference. And this shouldn't be the case, because if we think about the white British, if we think about the white flight hypothesis, it would suggest that whites who dislike diversity and immigration should leave diverse areas more than whites who are quite accepting of diversity and immigration. But in this question, which says comfort with spouse of a different race, and we had questions on immigration, we had other questions in there as well. Those who are very comfortable with the idea of a spouse of a different race, still 61% of them moved to whiter areas. And whereas those who are fairly uncomfortable, 64, there's really no statistically different response there between whites who have a more kind of racist attitude and those who have a less racist attitude. They're both moving to relatively white areas. There's a slight effect here for the small part of the sample that said they were very uncomfortable with the idea of a spouse of a different race. But it's not, it's a very weak effect. So again, so this then casts some doubt on the white flight hypothesis. So if it's not white flight and it's not material advantages, what is it? And this is an interesting question. One of the things that could be are social ties. And so there's a quote from Thomas Schelling: if blacks are Baptists and whites Methodists, the two will be segregated on a Sunday morning. Even if there's nothing conscious going on, there's no conscious discrimination going on, but it just happens to be that these people are of different religions. So if they go to church, they'll be segregated. A lot of that kind of unconscious segregation, I think, is going on. One of the ways it can happen is through friends and family. So white British people tend to have more social networks outside of London in much whiter areas. And this is from the Understanding Society survey. White British who move towards diversity are moving generally away from where their mothers are located, or further away from where their mothers are located, on average. And for ethnic minorities, that's the reverse. So that's one possibility. Another possibility is, I mean, if we look in the citizenship surveys, even if you control for the ethnic attachments of a minority individual, their religion matters. So if they're a regular attender, they're more likely to live in a more diverse area. And if they are living in a very white area, they're not likely to be attending religious services as much. So it seems to be, there may be something in terms of the availability of religious services, houses of worship, particularly mosques or African Pentecostalist churches or so on, that it's simply more difficult if you're living, you know, far away from the ethnic cluster. So this might be affecting people's mobility choices as well. For white British, another possibility, another sort of issue that we might want to look at is our unconscious processes. So even though you can have a white liberal and a white conservative, it may be that subconsciously something is going on there. And it's quite interesting in this chart, when asked how important their local neighborhood is for their sense of self-identity, the percentage drops consistently as we move from the whitest to the most diverse wards for white British individuals. Now, how can that be explained? I'm not sure that people are consciously aware of why this is the case, but it's just an interesting observation that needs more unpacking. So just to conclude then, what we see is that white British have a long-term pattern of net out-migration from London, which has continued in the 2000s. Minorities are more attracted to London, or they're more reluctant to leave London than are the white British. The segregation patterns that we observe, I would argue, are relatively unconscious. They're not driven by ethnocentrism per se, but ethnicity matters. So ethnicity does matter, but ethnocentrism doesn't seem to matter as much. And so what I'm suggesting is it might be correlates of ethnicity, such as religious amenities, or such as family and friendship networks, that are driving some of the results that we see. And that's it, really.
Thanks very much.